Hello, and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tenkar, your bartender in the OSR, and this is another in our Fireside Chats series of sit-downs. Very informal with creators and designers and makers in the gaming industry. Today, we have Krillian Greydragon from D20 Pro. Krillian, how are you today?
Doing pretty well.
So, I'm going to start us out with five questions to kind of get a background. And as I mentioned before the podcast, we're going to pretty much do a hex crawl or sandbox after that. And we'll go where the conversation takes us. All right. So, Krillian, tell us about your first RPG experience.
Ooh, middle school. That's kind of a frightening time.
For all of us, that's when I started too.
Right. So mid-80s, my mom had taken us to New Mexico to kind of, she wanted me to kind of get an idea of our background and heritage. So we went and spent a little bit of time on the Muscalera Apache Reservation in New Mexico near Ruidoso. And a good friend of mine introduced me to D&D, and short time after that, my mom came home. Of course, it snows a lot there, so you're trapped inside, you know. And early Christmas present, you know, handed me the DMG, and that pretty much been a solid in my life ever since.
That's pretty damn cool, and it's about the same age. When I came out, about the same time, I came out, I guess the year the DMG was just released, because my friend had the DMG, but he didn't have the player's handbook. So he had to call a friend to see if I leveled up afterwards. So, yeah, I think it was the end of sixth grade for me. All right. So what is your go-to RPG system and why?
Right now, pretty into 5e. Okay. I like to, I'm a little bit more of a modern sci-fi buff. I mean, I still really enjoy my, you know, the fantasy roots and things like that, but, I tend to lean more towards, you know, sci-fi and, Doctor Who and things like that.
Okay. Which I always find interesting is that when it comes to written literature, I think fantasy is extremely strong. But when you look at movies and TV, science fiction is definitely stronger and better represented than fantasy. And then you have RPGs, where I think fantasy is better represented than sci-fi. I don't know. That might be something we'll touch on later. So you came in with AD&D. So this question... It may not apply so much, but basic D&D had racist class, AD&D, which is what I was interested in also, didn't have it. But where do you fall on racist class as being a thing?
I played pretty much every edition made. I've got a pretty nice white box enshrined on the bookshelf. So,
cool.
Races class. I'm personally against. I enjoy race as a flavor or color for a character. I think it should be a tool used to draw specialties out of that person's concept of their character, rather than as a building platform, which I think class is more appropriate for.
Okay. Perfect sense, actually. All right. So where do you stand on save or die? Not the podcast, but the actual save or die concept.
The mechanic?
Yeah.
I'm again, a little bit of the old school sphere here. I'm kind of for.
Okay.
As a GM, I find it a useful tool. It definitely heightens drama and, you know, scene intensity. with that, I have a couple of caveats with its usage. I think that it should be used incredibly sparingly and for the right reasons. Not overly used or used willy-nilly, right?
Right. Yeah, it's strange. That's the one question that is usually the most difficult for people to answer. Because it's a mechanic that we all play with, but how much we use it, a lot of times we don't think about it. And the perspective changes if you're a GM or if you're a player. As a player, you don't want that to come into the game.
It's very trepidatious as a player, yeah. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of love and work and, you know, building up that character and, you know, it have it all hinge on one dice roll is, you know, that's a scary thing.
Yeah.
So, again, I think that, you know, I think it should be within the GM's toolbox to be able to have that and use it where appropriate. But I think a lot of GMs should, you know, really take a step back and look at what they're trying to present to their players and, you know, story appropriateness and make sure it fits and make sure there's something, you know, worth the risk.
Yeah, my issue, even as a GM, it shouldn't just be that random trap that's placed on a hallway is suddenly save or die. You should be risk versus reward. There shouldn't be some kind of reward in a save or die situation.
Agreed, very much.
But yeah, I said that's the question that the answer is very greatly on, and it's just interesting for me to see how that is. All right, well, here's our last question, and then we're going to, I guess, hit the hex crawl part of this. What would the teenage you and your much like me, you started in middle school and you're gaming. But what would the teenage you think if they could see what you would have accomplished in a hobby at this point in your life?
Ooh. I got into this very, well, is for professionally, I guess you could say, very late in life.
Okay.
I was, you know, diehard, you know, nut job fan for decades. And I think teenage me would have said, take this a little bit more seriously as far as, you know, where you want to go, where you want to be in 10 years, that kind of thing. And I wish I had explored it more as a younger person than the way I kind of fell into it as an older person. Not that I'd have been more happy, I guess, just that, it could have, I found such a great world here of people. And I think what a lot of people really fail to see, once you kind of scratch the surface of this sphere is that it's very small. And it's, I mean, a lot smaller than any of my, you know, first preconceptions of about, you know, RPG companies and the people that make RPGs and, you know, the people that write the books and all those kinds of things. And I didn't really realize, you know, just how small that community really was. But they're a great bunch of people and a lot of really nice folks and a lot of very talented folks. And I'd like to have fallen in with them at a younger age.
That makes perfect sense to me. I took a break from gaming from like 97 till probably around 2006 2007, so I had a huge break, and me actually getting to a chance where I could personally go to conventions and meet the people behind the games or the material that I play, it's been amazing. But you are so right that the actual people that are actively creating is small and the company is involved. Like if you think, even Frog God Games, you know, Swords and Wizardry and, you know, Bard's Gate and Rapidathic and all the material they put out, it's a small company. It really, it's personalities and until recently, for everybody, it was a part-time gig that they did to on the side after doing their, 9-to-5 work. And it's interesting to see that world, because I was a civil servant for 20 years, and before that I worked retail for about 9. The intimacy of being part of this hobby or industry is something that you don't get in other occupations, I guess. If that makes any sense.
It does. I mean, all of the people, since I've been doing this for Mesa Mundi, all of the people that I've interacted with have been just incredibly outgoing and, friendly, and they want to help, and, they want to see you succeed, and I find that very refreshing, because as you say, your professional life, myself, many years as a computer technician, working hardware and things like that. And it's a pretty cutthroat business and,
I'm sure
that kind of thing. And, so it's very refreshing to find these people that are, very talented. They have a passion for, what they do. And they're very creative and they're very supportive in, wanting to see you do a thing, right? They want you to succeed. And I think that's very supportive just in the sphere itself. And I'd like to see a lot more of that.
Yeah, I see in tabletop gaming, especially RPGs, that most publishers don't see each other so much as competition, but as, friendly family rivalry. It, for the most part, because I go to conventions and I'll work the table for Frog God Games at this point, and I find myself socializing and talking with other publishers, and it's not like you would get, like when I worked retail, and if you went representing your company at a trade show or whatever, it was all pretty much happy handshakes, but they kind of like that virtual knife waiting to strike you or get an advantage over you. And I don't see so much of that in tabletop RPGs. What I see is a lot of these independent publishers stepping up to a lot of times help each other, offer advice. It's a different atmosphere. And that's why I guess it's like it's a friendly family competition as opposed to other marketplaces where it can be a lot more cutthroat.
Right, exactly.
It also might be that I guess we haven't come anywhere near to of tapping out the pockets of the customer base and the people in the hobby. I guess if that started getting a little, the wallets got tighter, competition might get a little bit more less friendly.
A little more fierce with the, I don't know. I don't want to cast any disparaging forecasts on the future, but the economy's doing pretty good, and in 30 years of hanging around this, I think that gamers are they're gonna support their hobby. Even when times are hard, I can buy ramen this month, or I can buy an RPG book. The RPG book gets bought. It's just
really the way it is. Technically, each bag of ramen is 2 servings, according to them. So, according to them, I should only need a bag and a half of ramen a day. And at my discount store, I can get 8 bags for $1. So, I could probably live on ramen for about $2 a week. It wouldn't be a very healthy living. And my wife does ask me, like, why do you buy this shit? I'm like, Because there are times I don't feel like, you know, making a real lunch or going out for lunch. And there is something very soothing about ramen. And the fact that it's costing me, in theory, I don't know, 10 cents a serving is just, you know, amazing. It's not too much that's tasty that costs 10 cents a serving.
We want to get off on ramen. Spend a couple of years in country in Korea, and once you've had the real thing, is phenomenally awesome.
Okay, I think they were talking that there was a ramen place up in Madison by when I went to Game Hall. I think it was part of the conversation. I might have to convince them to take me along on the next ramen ride. That's bad Mike from North Texas and before I got games, he got to go get some good ramen at a ramen place. He wouldn't stop talking about it. So, all right, I got to put that on my list of things to do. Now, D20 Pro was a virtual tabletop.
It is, yes.
I have been playing or experimenting or supporting virtual tabletops in some extent Klug Works and Screen Monkey.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and Klug was ugly. My God. But it's stuff that although I live in New York City, in the borough of Queens, I didn't have a local group. I really wanted a chance to experiment with playing online, and with Klug, I actually had my only third edition session as a player. I was a halfling rogue. Pretty much all I can remember about it was that I was a halfling rogue, and I died within the hour. But I saw the possibilities, and I enjoyed it. I think Fantasy Grounds is the first one I got to extensively act as a player with, because I've actually found a Dark Heresy, a Warhammer 40K Dark Heresy group that was forming up, and I jumped at the opportunity. You know, I ordered the book online. I jumped into the game, and this was run without like any kind of like Skype or Google Hangouts in the background. It was all text on a screen, which, and my experience, even from then, meant that a lot of times the gameplay slowed down as somebody walked off to the bathroom and didn't tell you. I liked it enough to buy, because I thought, wow, this would be a great thing for me to use in my, you know, maybe get the old group back together from high school and college, but the VTT, and I found that Fantasy Grounds, although it is very smooth, it's going back a number of years. I guess when me and my wife were dating, so this goes back at least 8 or 9 years. Well, it was very smooth as a player, as a GM. If you weren't willing to buy anything that was already pre-done, the interface to enter your own adventures was daunting and time-consuming, and not something that I was able to get comfortable with. And I played with Map Tools, which is the community updated VTT.
Right on.
That was technically beyond my abilities to do much with. I had too many bells and whistles to turn on. Roll20, when I backed it on Kickstarter when it first came out, it sucked. I'll be very honest with you. It sucked because Fog of War was totally borked and other things didn't work properly, and they finally fixed a lot of it. And I guess even going back a couple of years, I was a big enough blogger that Roll20 reached out to me, and they wanted to record a session of me running a game with my friends, because I was a known personality, and I had to explain to them that I am a theater of the mind DM for the most part, and all I'm using is Fog of War. I'm not using tokens. We're not using character sheets. It's all on the player side. It's going to be the most non-technical Roll20 game that you're going to actually want to put up on YouTube, and you probably won't want to put it up. And when I explained it that way, they didn't follow up on the offer, which is probably for the best for everybody involved. It's my gaming groups are about as uncensored as this podcast is, and I don't think it would have gone over well. But I've yet to find one that, even with Roll20, I'm not 100% satisfied with it, because some things just don't run as smoothly as they should. And that's not even counting the voice and video, which my gaming group, when we get together, covers from Vancouver, Canada, down to Florida, you know, up to Connecticut and Pennsylvania, New York. And voice and video on Roll20, the last time I sat down with it, when we actually tried using voice and video, it was like rolling random dice in an encounter. Vancouver could hear Florida, but couldn't see Florida. But Florida could see and hear New York, but New York could not hear Florida, but could see them. It was bizarre. So I'm always open to finding a new VTT. And I think a lot of the people that listen to the podcast are, because I think virtual tabletops, to a large extent, are certainly a supplement or an alternative avenue for regular tabletop gaming. It brings the world together for gaming purposes. Your potential players are everywhere. Anybody you meet online can be somebody who can sit at your virtual tabletop. Tell us about D20 Pro. What makes it different? What makes it rock?
Ooh, wow! There's a lot of ground to cover there.
You got the highlights. I mean, like I said, I'm a big fanboy of VTTs. I didn't even mention Battleground RPG. I have, six plus one license there, and it's like a Ultimate on Fantasy Grounds. I've got a couple of them that I've purchased licenses with the expectation to use, but I'm still trying to find that sweet spot. I can appreciate them all, I guess, but they all do their own things differently. But what do we have with D20 Pro?
I think we have a very open and interested development group. I think we try pretty hard to be directly in touch with the people that use the application. I think that's a thing that you don't see enough of today.
I would definitely agree with that.
It's one of the, like yourself, it's part of my purview to be aware of other VTTs that are out there and, you know, kind of what they're doing and that kind of thing. And like yourself, I've, you know, poked and prodded at most all of them. And I think that everybody in this realm does something very well. And respectively, I think that each of us have our shortcomings or things that we could do better. I think that D20 Pro is very cognitive of its own shortcomings.
Okay.
I think that on the plus side of that, we're very interested in and responsive to what our user base is saying or what they want. We try to implement those things as best we can. We try to affect the subtle changes within the application to make that more usable, dependent on, you know, the general user requests. If they say, I'd really like this mechanic to be able to show me this thing, If it's at all possible, we'll try to make that happen. That being said, one of the things that when you were mentioning all these VTTs a minute ago, one of the things that popped into my head that I wanted to point out, and in the chat, some of the folks were talking about console gamers and things like this. And I think that kind of like the RPG industry we were talking about earlier, it's so easy to overlook some of the underpinnings of this. And that's this point here. I think most users have a very hard time understanding the deep complexities of making an application such as a VTT be so transmutable and fluid, and not just being able to control it, but being able to manipulate it on the fly in the moment that you need that thing to happen, such as adjusting a role or adjusting an outcome or presenting a particular thing to a player, client. And that makes it distinctly more difficult than, say, your console game or your MMO, where those outcomes are, you know, completely automated and scripted and thought of before the instance of that event or that thing actually happening. So it presents and this is why I think that, you know, all VTTs do some things really well and some things not so well, because there's so many moving pieces under the hood, and getting all of that right is very challenging.
I'm sure you got to choose your focus. It makes a lot of sense. I think, in my experience, and again, it's sad because it said my experience with Fantasy Grounds as a player was very good, and my experience with, as a GM doesn't exist, because I after like a week of trying to enter data, I gave up. I mean, and you can run it without it, but Fantasy Grounds kind of sold itself and the ability to pop up all these text options and everything else, and yeah, it wasn't as streamlined as I guess I would have liked.
Well, I'd agree with that in that, but again, I'm speaking of, you know, pretty much any VTT. Just like at the live table, the amount of prep work that the GM has to do, the amount of readiness that he has to prepare for, is a time sink. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, going to run things at a con, or, you know, your local brick and mortar store, or you're doing it on VTT. You've got to be willing to put in that commitment of time and love and effort to build that world for your players. That's applies even more slightly to VTT. You were asking a minute ago, what's one of the things that makes, you know, D20 Pro hot? And I think another answer to that is that not only can you, you know, hop on Discord and ask us, you know, specific technical questions, and we'll either, you know, answer you right there on the spot, or, you know, within a day or so at the latest. But, you know, I offer, you know, to, you know, live chat with the people or screen share with them and show them how to do a thing and that kind of thing, you know, if it warrants it, if they're just stuck. But I think the a secondary answer to that question a moment ago is that D20 Pro offers you the exact same tools to build your world that we use in-house to build for sale products. Likewise, you know, if there's something that we don't have in the marketplace, you can build that yourself. If there's some homebrew that you want to add, you can build that yourself. If, you know, you're a GM on a budget, there's nothing preventing, as long as you're willing to spend the time and do the data entry,
right?
You can, you know, put any book you want into the VTT. You've just got to be willing to sit there and, you know, and either cut and paste it all in or type it all in or, you know, add all your feats and all your classes and things like that. It's not, we don't restrict it in any way in what you can build on your own in any fashion.
Well, that's pretty cool. And I really do like and appreciate the fact that you pretty much have live tech support for people, or quasi live. I mean, obviously they have to tell you what the problem is, and you guys have to arrange a time to work on it. But that's something you don't see with a lot of companies.
Well, it's not 100%. I mean, you know, all of us, you know, we have lives outside of Discord and what have you and stuff like that. But generally speaking, we're pretty hot to, you know, to interact with the user base within the same day of them asking. You know, we're generally, someone's always around, even if it's not the exact right person to answer your question. There's generally somebody there that'll give you some kind of feedback, or, you know, hey, I'll talk to Owlbear this evening and we'll hook up with you tomorrow, and after we, you know, talk amongst ourselves and see if we can find out, you know, what's the best direction for you to go on this topic.
That is a selling point. I mean, I know other games have forums you can ask questions. Usually the community tries to, you know, solve the issue with, or it's other VTTs, other software. But using Discord, I think a lot of ways Discord is the future for a lot of customer support issues for companies in general, if they're smart, because the level of interaction and the ability to handle that stuff is certainly different than posting on a forum.
It is very different, yeah. It took a little bit of nudging, and once we kind of got the ball rolling and we saw, like what you're saying, the amount of personal interaction that we could have with the user base and how much more fluid that was, and understanding, you know, the point they were trying to get across, and explain, you know, our position, or you know, some little technical bit of how to do a thing. That fluidity is a much better medium than, say, you know, email or forums or the like, right? It's just a lot better suited to that task. And I think you're right. I think, you know, just in the last year, you're seeing a lot more community-driven, you know, channels for Discord around a particular application or a particular game. And I think that's just a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, for us, the Techhurst Tavern Discord's almost literally been on fire. The growth of it's been huge. And I think that's partially due to an awareness that Discord actually exists outside. You know, it's something that people that aren't just gamers, and like when I say gamers, I mean a lot of times like computer and Xbox and PlayStation gamers, they knew about Discord. There's a lot of discussions there, but I think Discord is becoming much more widely known, and I think it's a good thing.
I do as well. And touching on what you were saying earlier about, you know, being Discord, you know, coupled with a VTT is just a fantastic medium for, like you were saying, playing with your friends, you know. We got a couple of guys from across the pond that game with us, you know, and spread out all over, you know, the U.S. and Canada, and we could never do that, and we couldn't have those friendships with those people if we had to do it, you know, at a live table. And I think that's a really nice thing for the gaming world, and I think it's a great medium. One of the daunting things that you were talking about earlier is, you know, the level of complexity and whatnot that you have in a lot of the VTTs. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, even with just a private little Discord, you know, chat group, not even necessarily a channel, but, you know, you just invite your friends to a private chat to have a game. You can talk live. You don't have to wait on somebody to type something out, a la back in the old days when everything was text-based, you know.
Before the high-speed internet, I remember playing EverQuest on dial-up.
Oh, right on. We were running games on Maximus BBS system, running across FidoNet. So, you know, it'd take about 4 or 5 days for your, you know, you'd send your message on your local bulletin board and it'd take four or five days to get, you know, across the country or across the world. And then you'd wait for your reply and it was all text-based gaming, you know, as back even before the play-by-email concept, right? You'd play by a message board on bulletin board service and those kinds of things. So it's definitely come a long way. But what I wanted to really highlight on is, especially for the users out there that are, you know, that are interested in this, Discord, super simple, easy to use. Like I said, just throw up your own little private channel if you don't want to, you know, take space on, somebody's Discord server. Most people are more than willing to give you a little spot. We definitely are, you know, if you want to channel to host your games in, we'll definitely throw that up there for you. But anyway, as far as the VTTs go, you know, you can make this as easy or as difficult on yourself as you want to. You know, earlier you were mentioning that, you know, old school theater of the mind, all I want to do is present, you know, a small little bit of play space and maybe move a token around and that's it.
Right.
I don't want to do a bunch of complex scripting and, you know, super lighting and fog of war and all these other things. And really wanted to impress upon people that if that's what works for you and your group, you can definitely do that with D20 Pro. You don't have to be any more, you know, complex than what you're comfortable with. You know, if all you want to do is track initiative and move a couple of tokens around, you know, you're certainly able to do that, and we encourage you to do that. If you want to get, you know, super deep into the grit and, you know, have weapons that register whether you hit or not and fire off secondary abilities and, you know, add fire to them and make saves and things like that, we encourage you to do that as well. And, you know, we're happy to help you on the road to getting your game where you want to be.
Well, and I tell you the truth, I think that's the key, the ability or the I guess it's having that help available for your player base. If you're going to differentiate yourself in the marketplace that, I don't know if the VTT marketplace could be sort of crowded, but it's certainly got a number of players in it. How you interface, I guess, with your community and how you support them, if that's really what's going to make a difference, I think, for a lot of your potential customers and players. And that sounds great, if you ask me.
Well, my technical title for Mesa Mundi is the community manager, so I am a little biased in that regard. But I do a little bit of everything, you know. Like I said, I kind of fell into this. It wasn't something I'd ever professionally done or have done. So, you know, there are things I get wrong about it, but I think there's a lot of things that we do right about it.
Well, you certainly have a passion for it, and to be honest with you, most things I think are accomplished in this hobby is due to being interested in it and being quasi-good at what you do, but certainly being in the right place at the right time or just being somewhere and participating is as valuable as any other way to get involved in this hobby. I certainly – don't have a queer background that would have made me an effective blogger or podcaster. Yeah, maybe the interview skills from the NYPD, but I'm not putting you in the box, and I'm not trying to get information out of you to convict you for a crime. So yeah, I don't think it carries over very well. But I mean, yeah, it's I think passion goes a long way in accomplishing stuff in this hobby and having those opportunities. You obviously have the passion.
It's yeah, you know, like yourself, you know, just a lot of years of having that creative outlet, and you know, like many artists, you know, you want to build that world, you want to tell that story, and I'm happy to have, you know, gaming be able to facilitate that purpose for me, and it's, you know, it's how I met my wife, so there you go.
I did not meet my wife through gaming, but I got back into gaming fully because of my wife, and she supported it and told me, no, you need to spend Saturday nights playing online VTT with your friends. And I'm like, are you newly married? I'm like, first, like 2 weekends after we got married, I'm like, are you sure about this? She goes, yes, it's important to you. You enjoy yourself. You have fun.
Right.
And if you're using a virtual tabletop, I know where you are.
Know where you're at. Yeah, exactly. I, friend of mine showed up at the end of my shift at work one night. He was like, hey, man, we're going to go to this Shadowrun game. You should come. And I was like, I haven't gamed in a while. And I don't know, Shadowrun, man. Isn't that like sci-fi game? And he was like, yeah, but dude, there's this girl. There's this chick and she's a GM. You got to come. So I was like, all right. And so I went and, you know, there was, you know, 6 or 8 gamers sitting around the table. And this very Mother Earth hippie-esque, you know, chick at the end of the table running this game. And we kind of hit it off. We got married and we had 2 daughters and they're gamers. And actually, they're gaming in the living room right now with their friends. So she's as much into gaming as I ever have been. You know, I hear a lot of times of, man, I wish I'd married a gamer. And for all the people out there, it's a blessing and a curse. Don't get me wrong. It's a blessing in that, yes, we both love gaming with a passion. And we've been doing it for years. And, you know, we don't even have a couch in our living room.
And you need room for the table. I understand that.
Yeah. It's all, you know, computers and gaming and bookshelves and whatnot. And but the downside is, you know, we can't walk out of a gaming store without at least one book. That's an imperative. You know, it just can't be passed up. It's not, honey, can I buy this book? It's, no, we have to buy these 4 things. They're out. Ooh, shiny. Dice. Clicky clack sound on table.
Oh, well, yeah, dice is a weakness.
Yes.
You know, my wife was not a gamer when I married her. And I think when we were courting, I ran her through a session of Tunnels and Trolls because I was like, oh. I ran her through a solo and I kind of GM'd it. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, I was going to go to North Texas with one of my friends. First convention since Gen Con back in 94, I guess. And you know, he just, you know, his budget changed. He couldn't afford it. He had to back out. So my wife's like, well, you have the room already, right? I'm like, yeah. She goes, all right. So when you get the plane tickets, she goes, I'll go with you. I looked up the hotel. I'm going to, down in Dallas. Oh, I'm going to hop on. I'm going to walk around. I'll take a cab in the town. I said, all these plans. I got her into a Time Master game with Tim Schneider, which I chose because I figured nobody would know the rules and she'd be no more disadvantage than anybody else. And within 30 minutes, she's talking about how she's putting this forearm creature in a double Nelson wrestling move. And I'm looking at, this is my fucking wife? Where did this come from? Because I didn't know. And that was on Thursday. By Friday, she was telling Bad Mike, one of the two guys who runs the convention, we're coming back next year. And I looked at her and went, we are. She goes, yeah. She played, I think, in five sessions that first year. She'll only game at conventions at this point, but she games at every convention we go to. Even if I don't get a chance to game because I'm running games for Frog God, I'm working a table. It's like Rachel's going to me, you don't need me at the table, right? I'm like, no, why? She goes, oh, there's an old girls game going on. I'm going to hang out in the old girls game.
Very nice. Right,
have fun. Enjoy yourself. Like, okay. So I got very lucky. I got blessed. And with blessings, I knew I had a supportive wife when I married her. I just didn't know that she'd also embrace my hobby and really enjoy it too. So, yeah, lucky.
That's a very, very positive in life when you can, you know, be surrounded by family and friends that not just, you know, slough it off as, oh, that's that crazy hobby that Krill does, but, you know, they actively want to participate and they have some understanding of the world itself and, you know, they're interested in that. And, you know, that's one of the second or third or whatever questions it was that you asked earlier. If younger in life, you know, you was to give, you know, what advice would you give that person? And that would be, and I think this falls right in there, and that would be that, you know, people that don't have the same, not necessarily the exact, you know, you don't want a clone copy of yourself, that would be boring, but people that don't support your passions and your hobbies and your interests, and they make those things a hazard, you know, I don't want to go so far as at all to say, well, you know, you should cut those people out of your life or anything like that. That's crazy talk. But definitely, you know, surround yourself with people that enjoy your same passions, right? To support you in that and, you know, are interested in those kinds of things. And you have that common ground to build from. I can definitely attest that in almost 30 years of marriage that gaming has definitely softened some of the rougher patches in those 30 years.
That's funny. Now, my wife has been very supportive. Rach has, she's the one that really encouraged me to blogging. The tavern's blog wouldn't exist without her. She is even, you know, it's like, hon, I'm doing another interview. And it wasn't even about tonight. It's just going back like, a week ago, she's like, "Oh, okay. What time?" I go, "From 7 to 8." She goes, "All right. Well, I'll go shopping so I don't disturb the dog during your interview when she gets home from work." So she goes, "I'll kill a little time and then we'll go out to dinner." I was like, "You're sure?" She goes, "Yeah. You're telling me that like your podcasting has given me an excuse to go shopping for shoes. It's a win-win. Well, maybe not a win-win for maybe not a win-win when I get the credit card bill, but certainly." she is just, again, like I said, you've obviously been blessed. I'm blessed. You know, and it's strange, like, you know, my son is not a gamer. He might be a computer gamer and a console gamer. He's 25. He would watch me in the VTTs and he that almost tempted him because it was computerized. And even then he was like, no.
Right.
But my niece is 8. And she loves dungeon terrain. She'll build her own dungeon. She wants to play the dungeon board game. She surprised me a couple of weeks ago when she was over. I heard her in the background going, "This is Pinky Tenkara, and you're listening to the Tavern Chat podcast." I went, and I looked at her. She's sitting next to me on the couch. And I'm like, and I gave her a look, and I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Well, Uncle, I mean, at some point you're going to be like 91, and somebody will have to like, take over for you." I'm like, 91, huh? She's like, how do you think I am? And she's like, yeah, I know you're 51 now, but, you know, in 40 years, you might, like, need to stop.
Grooming your replacement, huh?
Yeah, she's already grooming herself for it. She figures, I guess, if Uncle can do it, I can do it.
Okay. Well, just a point here, you know, it's, I talk to a lot of gamers, you know, on both sides of the fence. For a couple of years, we ran our private group ran a fairly decent, you know, first person shooter clan, doing all the first person shooter games. And, you know, and then of course on the RPG side, we've done, you know, all the MMO stuff, you know, and the MMO games and things like that. And there's a somewhat not so friendly anymore kind of rivalry between the, you know, there's always been between the, you know, the PC crowd and the console crowd. And,
oh yeah.
And RPGs, you know, with their, you know, rise in popularity over the last several years, in this kind of comeback to gaming, that we're seeing. And, you know, there's this kind of rivalry between the, you know, the RPG crowd and the, you know, the console computer crowd. And I think that's all good fun. And as long as it's taken that way is in all good fun, it's good. It's a little disheartening and sad when you see that get a little fervent. Yeah. I think there's good people on both sides. And I think there's good qualities to both sides. Now, on a completely personal level, I'm a little disappointed at the tech intelligence curve as far as, you know, that arena goes. It seems to me that in the last 10 years, we've seen what's a good way to put this? A boiling down to the lowest common denominator of how to tell a story as far as like a console game goes, right?
I got you.
And I'd like to see some of the, you know, earlier generation, you know, new way of looking at presenting a thing and telling a story and that creativeness come back to that genre rather than the, we're going to boil this down to the least common denominator to tell this story so that we can move on to kick out the next product, right?
Well, you know, it's the idea that we're going to keep it safe and stay with what we know might work rather than trying to find the next huge thing. We'll just keep continuing our, you know, okay size things that make money as opposed to pushing the envelope. It applies to a lot of things, and certainly with video gaming, so much money in that market and so much money developing games, you think that they wouldn't always play it so safe, they would push. But
it applies to us as well. And I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, we're seeing, you know, new stuff, you know, just, there's every kind of Kickstarter you could possibly imagine. And that's kind of refreshing to see. You know, one of the things that my wife and I have always done, and that is generally the players that, you know, we pull to our table or to our side or, you know, choose to have hang around us are players that are very open to not getting stuck in a rut. In other words, when a player comes to us, and again, this is completely personal in our personal mm-hmm. group, and says, well, I'm a 5e player. And if you guys are going to do, you know, Cypher system this week, you can count me out. I only do 5e. We kind of scoff at that a little. We've got RPG systems on our bookshelf right now that we've, you know, read cover to cover, but never actually played at a table. We've always cherished the idea of reading a new rule system, exploring a new rule system and how they, you know, approach a particular bit of storytelling or how to put a character together. And that's one of the things about the RPG sphere that I find very refreshing. And I really enjoy seeing, again, to go back to the very beginning and touch about how small a community this sphere is,
yeah.
But yet has so many creative people in it, and we're still seeing new things, right? New gaming systems and, or, you know, new branches of, gaming systems. forks off of, you know, 5e or going back to old school, you know, the original, the reprints or remastering of, you know, first edition or second edition, right, and seeing those things kind of kick back up again and new blood kind of poured into that. And I think that's one of the things that makes the RPG world a little bit better than the console and gaming world. And that there's generally this drive for freshness.
Well, yeah, but I think that tabletop role-playing, it attracts creatives. I think that hobby-wise, and of course I'm pulling a number out of my ass, but I think that you find a greater percentage of role players are going to be artists, writers, game creators and such than you are for players of computer games and players of console games, because that's more, it's more of a passive experience. You're enjoying it, yeah, whatever, you got to do your Twitch or you got to figure out the adventure. But tabletop role-playing is interactive between different people, different minds, different perspectives. And I think that attracts a larger amount of creatives than a lot of other hobbies does. And I think that's why we're lucky.
It does, and I'd agree with that. Eric brings out an interesting point about board games are definitely making a comeback, you know. We're seeing some really great new board games and some very creative stuff out there. Speaking of which, just a little bit of the inside in the know, that's one of the things that D20 Pro wants to eventually touch on or get to, and that's where you'll be able to, you know, do a board game in the VTT itself. I'm kind of excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah, when I first got married, it was a lot of, what do we play a lot of? Ticket to Ride and was it Catan? Not even sure. But my wife, my mother, and me, of course, the moment that you actually played a game like Ticket to Ride where you were blocking people's paths as opposed to just going after your own, my wife and my mother didn't take too kindly to that, but I was like, this is how you play competitive games. I don't want you to get like Chicago. I'm going to block your way there. I'm looking to win, not just waste time. But there, I the Euro games especially have been huge. Even right now, on my desk is my box from Epic Quest. I'm probably going to try to get my niece into this one.
Oh, wow.
So you should enjoy that. It serves a dual purpose. It also, when I need to use my cam, my cam sits on it as opposed to hanging off the top of my computer. It can sit on my Epic Quest box. And that way, people aren't necessarily totally looking up at my head when I'm in like a video chat. But, man, this has been good. You know, I can mention, when we do a sandbox, we cover anything and everything the conversation goes around, and it was good. Thank you.
Sure, absolutely.
So, and if somebody wanted to pick up D20 Pro, what's it going to cost them?
We're a little old school on this. We've got a buy once, play forever approach. So
that's refreshing.
The way this works is you buy a license, a GM license, and it comes with 4 seats. Now, these seats allow anyone to connect to your game host, whether they have a license or not. So, there's 2 approaches here. The player can buy a license for $10 and they can join any game session they want and not take up a seat. Alternatively, the GM can buy additional seats and never pester his player base or prospective players to purchase a license if they don't ever want to. I mean, of course, we would appreciate them supporting the software, obviously, but again, I was an avid fan long before I ever became associated with D20 Pro or Mesa Mundi. And this is what drew me to D20 Pro over the others back in the day when my wife and I were looking at VTTs. Because in this way, as GM, I could buy an extra couple of seats, and then my wife and I have run a website and gaming site for, you know, before the internet was a thing. Like, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, we were back on the bulletin board systems in the day. So right. We've always having, you know, players come and go, just like at a live table, you know. A guy will play with you for 6 or 8 months, you know, hardcore, and then he gets a new girlfriend and you don't see him for half a year, you know. Nothing against the guy, just, you know, life happens.
Right.
But, you know, when you start talking to people and you say, well, but to get involved into this, you have to spend this nickel, that kind of puts people off, right? So as a GM, I can say, look, don't worry about it. If you might not like our group, or you might just not fit in, or it might not be the game for you, but hey, come sit in and, you know, hang out for a session or two, and, or, you know, play this side NPC and just, you know, test the water, see what you like about it. You don't have to buy nothing. I've got enough seats. You can get the full-blown trial and try out all the bells and whistles. But even after the trial expires, I've got enough seats to handle you, so you don't even have to worry about that. And then if you don't like it, you haven't spent anything. It's not, you know, something you're going to, well, you know, Krill tried to get me in this game, and I just really didn't care for it. It wasn't my thing, but I spent this money. Now I've got this thing that I really can't use. As a GM, you don't have to worry about that for your group, right? So you can, if four is all you ever need, then all you're ever out's the $50, right? For the application, you've got four seats, you're good to go. If you want a little wiggle room in there, you know, add a few seats at $10 a pop till you get that happy number that you're happy with, and off you go to the races, and you're done.
That works. I like that approach.
And but that, you know, that also ties back into, you know, paid product versus created product. Again, to want to kind of stress that, we're putting out, you know, marketplace product. You know, we definitely want you to buy that, to help support software and the vendors, the artists, and all those kinds of people. That's great stuff. But at the end of the day, there's also an equally viable answer. That is, if you have the book on the bookshelf and you're willing to put in the time and sit there and, you know, and build your world out, you know, you don't ever have to buy a thing if you don't really want to. Now, it saves a tremendous amount of time to be able to do that. And, you know, most GMs are in that boat. They don't have that kind of time they can dedicate to doing that kind of data entry.
Right.
So that, you know, it's a win-win for everyone. It saves you that time. It's not horribly expensive. And, you know, you can pick up various, you know, classes and books and things of that nature, you know, maps and tokens and all those kinds of things to, but again, I want to stress at the end of the day, you know, if you're willing to learn, to make tokens, you know, GIMP's free, you don't have to, buy Photoshop. There's alternatives, right? Is, I guess, yeah, is what I'm trying to get at.
I think, free alternatives. I think Map Tools had like a token tool that you could use to make tokens or you know, I guess virtual pogs for your games. Although I haven't looked at it in years. I remember it was a thing back in the day when I was first coming back and using VTTs.
I do believe you can still find token tool out there somewhere. I'm sure it's hiding somewhere around the web. So, yeah, I mean, you can find all kinds of nifty little utilities to help you along the way to, doing all your own stuff. And, you know, so if you're on a budget, you know, you can still run an awesome game. You know, there's absolutely nothing that says that you have to have every single class in your particular build. You only need those classes that are applicable to your player base, you know, so you can save time there. You don't have to build every single thing to run a great game.
Cool. Well, I think we've done a pretty good job covering, though we never cover everything that, you know, we could. It becomes a real sandbox. It never ends. But
right on.
Krillian, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm glad. I mean, I find that, you know, a good interview, the time flies. You don't realize, you know, what the clock says. And if you'd asked me how long we've been talking, I would have said, 35, 40 minutes. And I think we're at like 70 plus.
Right. So exactly.
It means that we had a good conversation, literally. So again, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to include show notes that will include links to the D20 Pro website. I'm sure people can Google something as simple as D20 Pro and find it. What's the actual website, Zach?
I'll drop the link in here for you for the users and stuff.
Okay.
As well as our documentation guide site. But it's d20pro.com.
Isn't that easy? That's easy enough. D20pro.com. 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 it's like one of those commercials you'll see on local TV. You have to repeat it three times because that's a special amount of times somebody to remember something, I guess.
Right on.
All right. Well, again, thank you, folks, as always. Thank you for stopping by. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice, and I will talk with you all tomorrow. Later, folks, be good.